And of course, when it came down to it, closure of one of the pits in Yorkshire, Corton Wood, was announced on the 1st of March 1984. And that sort of put the, you know, the oil on the fire, so to speak, and everything began to flare up from then on. Within 12 days after that, the miners' strike began to really bite, where one section after another came out in the different areas of the coal fields. Although some were a bit ambivalent at the in the first instance. So for instance, in South Wales, many of the Welsh pits were ambivalent about coming out. There was a minority in favour of coming out, mainly because in the past, where they had suffered closures or threats of closures, they didn't have the solidarity that should have been guaranteed, and therefore there was a bit of friction. However, Tyrone O'Sullivan, who I know, who was the Lord Secretary of Tower Colliery, one of the key left wingers, organised flying pickets to go around and visit all the collieries in South Wales, having mass meetings and explaining what was going on and convincing them to come out. And eventually the whole coal field shut down and was solid from then until the very end of the strike 1 year later. And this sparked the movement of the miners to defend their jobs and to fight this particular attack. Of course, there were some difficulties insofar as what normally has happened in the mine workers' union. You normally have a ballot. In 1972 and 1974, you organise a ballot of all the members, have a campaign, and win a majority for strike action. For the previous 2 years, there had been a series of setbacks in the mining union from the point of view of recommending ballots and recommending strike action over pay, productivity deals, and so on and so forth, which were defeated, which made a number of the lefts in the union cautious. By this time, the left really had taken over the union. The executive had been taken, Scar was the leader. But it takes more than that. You've got to go down and campaign and convince. Don't take things for granted. And this kind of scepticism, there was an element of scepticism, because the press were full of it. No way is there going to be a strike, because look at the miners in Yorkshire and elsewhere, the bonuses they're all earning. They got flashy cars, they got mortgages, video players at that time, all this other stuff. Therefore, they would never go on strike. They would never go on strike. But, of course, history proved them entirely wrong. Where there was a need to strike and a need to struggle, if workers are convinced of it, because no one likes to strike, then they would take action. And clearly, the majority of miners recognised that this strike wasn't an ordinary strike. They were defending the whole of their communities, because if they could get away with the closure of one pit on this basis, they'd shut the bloody lot down. And therefore, that's what miners rallied in that sense. However, the strike developed very quickly, with pickets being sent out from Yorkshire and elsewhere to different coal fields, which were having positive responses. But a layer went into Nottinghamshire, and Nottingham was traditionally a more right-wing area, together with the Midlands and Derbyshire and so on. And basically, the miners there reacted against this attempt to impose a solution on them. Although I think that could have been turned around, nevertheless, the local leaders in these areas in Nottingham wanted to keep out the pickets, wanted to do their own thing, and organise a ballot as well, without the necessary preparation, because you need to prepare people, clearly. And of course, the government was sitting now, had briefed out all its plans, national police forces were going to go in, the press and media had all been beefed up what stories they were going to have. In relation to social security, all the laws have changed, you know, to make it more difficult and all the rest of it. All things were put in place, as the Ridley report had been talking about, in order to defeat the miners. So it was a worked out strategy from the word go. And really, if the Labour leaders and the trade union leaders were worth their salt, they should have realised what was at stake, and they should have organised effective action against the Tory government on the basis an injury to one is an injury to all. However, that was not to be the case. That did not happen. Nevertheless, we see big layers of miners coming out on strike, and the executive of the union considering within a week what they were going to do. And the call was, instead of having a national ballot, they would go for Rule 41, which was each area would take their own decision to come out or whatever. Rather than that, each area would do it. And a number of arguments were put forward, well, you know, we can't allow a ballot result to determine whether we're going to fight for our jobs or not. It's too important. Although I think that's a mistake, nevertheless, that was the idea put forward at that time. A kind of poo-pooing of a ballot. The benefit of a ballot is that it would unify everybody. It would take away the propaganda arguments of the capitalists and so on. And it would do away with the idea of divisions more. But of course, that wasn't going to be the case. And the executive of the union, followed by a conference decision of delegates, preferred the idea of area by area, rejected the idea of a national ballot, which they could have won, in our opinion, they could have won it, provided you've campaigned, provided you've gone on the offensive, taking the arguments into North America and elsewhere. Of course, the capitalists and the Tories were making it more and more difficult, in the sense that immediately they sent 3,000 police into the Nottingham coalfields. Against intimidation, all the press was full of intimidation, violence, picket line violence, etc., etc. And they were just trying to whip up this hysteria and whip up the working miners themselves to try and get a kind of no vote. They did succeed. There was a ballot, and there was this. It was a majority in favour of working in Nottingham. So it began in a kind of a bit of a messy way, really. And of course, Thatcher was cock a hoop. Oh well, they'd won the battle in the Falklands, as they put it. Now we'll fight the industrial Falklands and defeat the miners. And exactly, and they thought it was going to be over with in a matter of a few months. Everything would be sorted. Of course, they were going to get a shock, because it would take more than that. And also, the Tory leadership were looking at the Labour leaders, and they're looking at the Labour leader, that Neil Kinnock, and so on, who was like a soft left, if you want to call it left, in inverted commas, was capitulating all the way down the line, moving further to the right, trying to be respectable, condemning the violence, and so on and so on. Of course, we are not in favour of violence, no one else is in favour of violence. But if you're facing violence, you're not going to sit there with the arms folded or turn the other cheek. You have to organise to try and to prevent this intimidation and so on. Of course, they were just pontificating about how bad violence was and so on in the abstract, rather than understanding what it's like. And in reality, anyway, the violence came from the ruling class, came from the police, the state apparatus. And it's a fairy tale to believe there's some other explanation or some neutral explanation and so on. It was concerted drive with the ruling class to smash the National Union of Mine Workers, because when they do that, they'll cow the rest of the working class. And they thought it was going to be an easy turnaround, but they were again shocked and surprised. And the reason why they thought it was easy, they looked at Neil Kinnock and they looked at Norman Willis, who was the General Secretary of the TUC at the time. Look at the TUC leaders and thought, well, they're not up to much. I'm sure we'll be able to sweep the rest of them out of the way. So, but they miscalculated, because what they didn't understand was the psychology, the courage, the determination of the ordinary miners and their families to defend their basic rights and their jobs and their communities. And they rose as one to defend that. And despite the enormous propaganda campaign, despite the split in the union, in a sense, because you're talking about 180,000 miners, 30,000 working, 150,000 on strike, looking for, to defeat the Thatcher government on this issue, because they knew if they were defeated, they would destroy the whole of the industry. But clearly, the Thatcher government was quite taken aback by this resistance, and they piled in again. Again, this time, I forget the actual figure, I think it was tens of thousands of police were put into the coal fields then. Talk about something, 50, 60,000 police were sent into the coal fields at least, in order to intimidate and subjugate the mining communities, to threaten them. And it's like a police state. I went to South Yorkshire, it's like a police state, where the police would blockade villages. And where the miners tried to have solidarity action and going for pickets and so on, then the police were sent in droves. They had a national headquarters in London determining every single step that the police were going to take. They were bugging officers. They knew exactly what was going to happen, where pickets were going to turn up. They'd stopped coach loads of pickets on the motorways. In other words, all your basic democratic rights, the right to strike, the right to second the action, the right to free speech, the right to organise, the right to picket and all this, all that was thrown out the window because the ruling class were determined to crush. They didn't care. Crush the miners, defeat the working class, and everything was put behind Thatcher. The media, the filth of the media was poured out against the miners, although give the devil, you know, give credit was Curtis due. Even the print workers stopped the copies of The Sun being produced because there was such filth being produced. They even went on strike and prevented them being produced. Other workers took solidarity action. Railway workers, transport workers rallied to support the miners to prevent the movement of coal and to begin the movement of solidarity. Of course, the strike began at a very bad time, really. We talked about March, the beginning of spring. That's not the great time for a miner strike. This is in 1926. It began in May. It's not the great time. Winter is the best time. Winter is your ally in that regard, as far as the miners are concerned. So they have to keep going throughout the whole of the summer period, holding on, building the unity from below. Every appeal that went to the labour leaders, they weren't. Kinnock just wanted respectability and so on. Give lip service to wasn't support at all. And the longer the dispute went, the more desperate the ruling class were now becoming, because they thought it was just going to be over in 2 minutes. And we see also the danger from their point of view, because not only was there attacks on miners, there were attacks on transport workers, particularly dockers. In fact, the dockers had a dockers scheme which guaranteed them work and protected their terms and conditions. In fact, they wanted to do away with all that, and therefore they wanted to abolish this labour scheme, and this provoked strikes of dock workers. Now, in reality, what would be better if the dock workers had really connected with the miners themselves at a united front? But and that was possible, but it didn't come about, not because there wasn't desire. Even though, you know, because the right wing of the TUC were prepared to stab the miners in the back, the left didn't know really how to galvanise this support that was there in the mass of workers themselves, and how to campaign against this immediate. And we see the attempts of the miners to blockade power stations. Augury was used, for instance, in the summer of 1984. But the state was also prepared. So the miners tried to picket and mass picketing, but the state sent in the armed force, if you like, of the police on horseback. Riot police were sent in with shields and so on, in order to prevent by physical force. And even the media was manipulated about picket violence. All that was manipulated in order to over-exaggerate the situation, in order to undermine as far as they could general support for the miners on the basis of this so-called violence that they were carrying out. But that was a setback. The only way that the miners couldn't win on their own at this time, they had to have the general support of the labour movement, of the rest of the working class. After all, they were fighting in the reality for the working class as a whole. And the state knew, and Thatcher knew, that they would have to step up the ante, and they used everything by bribery, everything you can name, get your hands on, to split the miners' union. Eventually, they did cause a split, and a new union was formed, the SCAB union, because they called it the UDM, Union of Democratic Miners. Just like in 1926, after 1926, in Nottingham, they formed the Spencer Union, which again a SCAB union of right-wingers and so on, we'll get money from big business in reality in order to split and finance this attempt to break the miners' union. And they tried all sorts of ways and means to manipulate and undermine the miners, including starving them out. There's no, we had to organise, the workers had to organise soup kitchens in order to provide just the ordinary sustenance for the miners and their families. You know, families were destroyed because of this pressure, this colossal onslaught against them. And for the fact of the matter, they were prepared to stand. And the miners' wives in particular played a fantastic role. Women in the strike played a fantastic role of giving backbone even to their menfolk, of knowing not going to go back. I don't know if you saw that, even that film Billy Elliot, the background of the miners' strike, about this young kid who wanted to dance and so on. But it showed the miners, let's say, get a little bit of a glimpse of the terror and the fear that was injected into those areas, not for a week, but a whole year, man. 12 months, the longest industrial struggle on that scale in the history of the British working class. And that showed the courage, that showed the determination of the working class. When they're up against the wall, if like the working class in Britain are slow to move when you compare it to the workers in Italy or France or something like that, yeah? But once they move, by Christ, they move. And they're quite stubborn about in resistance. And that's the qualities also of the British tradition, the British working class itself. Of course, the ruling class were prepared also to try and undermine this by using the state apparatus. And I remember the time, I was down there in South Wales in August 1984, the South Wales miners were faced, I think it was two private lorry companies took an injunction out against the South Wales Miners, Union. They defied the fine, and their assets were sequestrated. And we went down there, the Labour Young Socialists went down there, and we occupied the Miners Union headquarters, had big meetings outside and so on, to try and fight this sequestration. That was in August. Within the next couple of months, the main union headquarters were also sequestrated. It took a lot, despite the fact that at the beginning of the strike, because they knew what was happening, I think £8 million were taken from the coffers of the mining union and put in the Isle of Man and outside, trying to get basically prevent the ruling class getting their hands on it as reserves, you know, to keep the miners' union going, because it was an out and out struggle, an all barred struggle that was coming down to the very survival of the union. Now it became the survival of trade unionism. If a Tory government came in and could destroy a union, take all its assets and so on away from it, well, what the hell is trade unionism all about then? And an appeal was made to the TUC to, you know, come forward now and declare a general strike. And others, the lefts in the union, lefts in the Labour Party, Tony Benn and others, raised this demand for a general strike. But it fell on deaf ears. They weren't prepared to do it. They were all cringing, and they weren't reasoning, because they were reformers. They weren't prepared to use the enormous strength that is there in the way to paralyse the ruling class, because it puts them on the spot. At the end of the day, it also showed the strength for change in society. But these reformist leaders weren't prepared to do that. They were too lily-livered in order to do that. They compromised with capitalism, and they had no confidence in the working class. And as a result, the miners were continuing to be isolated, although there were opportunities, because the miners themselves, not just did coal, there's another union called NACODS, and NACODS is the safety operator, in charge of safety in the pits. And in April, I believe it was, they had a ballot about taking action, and 54% came out in favour of action, but they had a rule saying it had to be 55%. So they didn't take strike action. When they were told to cross the picket lines, because the National Cobalt said, well, you know, cross the picket lines if you can. If you can't, well, we won't make a deal out of it. By October, they were saying, you cross the picket lines. You cross the picket lines, otherwise you won't get paid and so on. So they had another ballot in NACODS, and I think it was 82 point something, nearly 83% in favour of strike action. And if they had come out, all the pits in Britain would have come to a show, because you can't operate a pit without the safety net. And everything was on a knife edge. But unfortunately, the leaders capitulated and came up with a compromise, you know, to solve their little problems, which meant that was taken away. And of course they lost their jobs in the Turners as well later on. It was just a foolish example where they could have turned the whole tide of the strike itself. This wasn't like any short Falklands victory. Clearly the miners showed the determination, but given the divisions, given the length of time, given the fact there was no power cuts because the Tory government had made sure that the electricity was now being generated more by nuclear power and more by oil and so on, they did every trick in the book, including, which was a scandal, importing coal from Poland. So-called socialist Poland was saving back Thatcher's hide and stabbing the miners in the back. I would say also, that conversely, that the miners received tremendous international aid from all over the world, and they went to different countries, and every time they raised these, a tremendous international support. And it's a shame that the Labour leaders in Britain weren't prepared to give them a 10% of the support that workers in other countries were prepared to give them. The reason why, they were terrified of losing their assets. We've got to keep in it, you know, as if the union is made up of just of bricks and mortar. It's made up of principles, it's made up of people. And fighting for those principles, of course, the bureaucracy on top are not interested in that kind of a thing. They're interested in their own careers, in their own privileged position. Anything that puts that in danger is what they're concerned about more than anything else. And they were prepared to see the defeat of the miners, because over the period of the Christmas, where the Christmas parties were held, it brought tears to your eyes. The solidarity was there. Food parcels were being brought in from different areas by workers, and yet the strike started to crumble because you couldn't hold out indefinitely. And without that solidarity coming from the TUC, it was all words and no action. And the action that did come came from ordinary rank and file workers who were prepared to risk their necks, actually risk their jobs, in order to keep that solidarity. But they started to crumble in the new year, and eventually they came together in a conference in March 1985 at the TUC headquarters, and by a very narrow majority actually decided to end the strike, not to give in. We're just giving up the strike. We're not giving in to the demands. We're just finishing the strike. And I remember it quite vividly, where the miners came back to work on a particular day, and in front of the colliery bands, and they marched with their heads held high back to work. They weren't defeated as far as they were concerned. But the coal board immediately went on the offensive. Thatcher immediately went on the defence, and although there were guerrilla activities in the pits, you know, the Scythe thing had been the blow had been dealt, if you like, and closures started to take place. People left the industry for demoralisation because they saw it as a defeat, and it was a defeat, but it wasn't just a defeat for the miners, it was a defeat for the working class. And we could see that by the victory of Thatcherism and how they turned the clock back in the factories, where they undermined trade union rights, where incidentally, remember, they took away the trade union membership of workers in GCHQ in early 1984. In other words, democratic rights were being taken away by Thatcher in order to get away with what she did, to make the working class pay for the crisis of capitalism through mass unemployment, the smashing of the communities in Yorkshire, in South Wales and everywhere else, to obliterate those. And that's what the price that the miners and the working class paid, a heavy price, which we are paying for even now today, 20-odd years later. Although there is beginnings of a change, a change in the working class, in the trade union movement. And what we have to do is gain heart, really, I'd say. Because in many of the mining areas, people were drawing revolutionary conclusions. You go to areas in South Yorkshire, whatever, the state, they knew what the bloody state was, and the state was armed bodies of men to defend private property in the capitalist system. There was talk of revolution, there was talk of militancy, of socialism, of they were fed up with this form of society, of dog-eat-dog. And those ideas were won on the basis not of books, not of reading newspapers, but of the actual experience themselves of the class struggle. And we know that the working class is forced to learn by experience and by events. And we know that capitalism is at bottom responsible for the ills of the working class. And although they defeated the miners, they didn't defeat the working class in the same way as they did in 26. The organisations were still intact. It was a blow, a hell of a blow. But the workers learn from these blows. Learn dearly from experience itself. And that's why, although there was a right, a turn to the right in the Labour Party, a turn to the right in the TUC and the trade union movement because of this defeat, nevertheless, it lays the seeds for the future. It lays the seeds in people's minds why this was the case. And those workers were made redundant, go to other factories, other industries, and take with them the seeds of these ideas, which will, under certain circumstances, bear fruit. Because at the end of the day, when we haven't had a generalised movement of the working class in Britain from that time. But does that mean to say the working class is finished? It would be a big mistake to think that is. It would be a falsehood. On the contrary, there's a building up and a building up of discontent and hatred in the working class. There's no happiness there. There's squeezing, making the working class pay for every ounce of sweat, where the profits of the bosses are going up and up and up, until we have this situation where there's enormous discontent in society. It hasn't got a way out, hasn't got any focal point. It's a very explosive mix in society at the moment. And anything can set it off, by the way. And up to, I've got here now to go into perspectives for the industrial field. We're limited here to this industrial strike and what it represented and the lessons of it. The task is, however, to change society, because capitalism always means the exploitation of the working class. It can do no other. And that the only way out is the overthrow of capitalism and the coming to power of the working class, creating a socialist democracy where the talents of workers can be used to the benefit of all, and to put into the dustbin of history, yes, the Thatcherites, the system of capitalism and all the ills that it has. That's still the task before us. And through the painful lessons of the past, we learn to enrich ourselves, to feed, to understand, to prepare ourselves for the battles that lie ahead. And there will be bigger battles which we will gain and we will win. And in that way, we have to build the forces of Marxism, build the forces of the socialist appeal, develop our forces in the trade unions, in the Labour Party, in the Labour movement in general, and prepare above all for the events that are going to come in the next period. Thank you.
Okay, well, we've got like 40 minutes for questions.